The coffin is so small it might be a child's coffin. As if the old woman had lived her life in the round, as if she had come back to the beginning. Madeline wonders if her neighbour finds the coffin too narrow, wonders if the sateen pillow was plumped up by the pupil in the funeral home before they laid her head on it, and if she is lying comfortably there under the lid. Four men in matching suits lift the casket and hoist it easily onto their shoulders. Over the years, her neighbour had become lighter and lighter, and when she died, well into her 90s, she was as lithe as a liana. She lived life to the full and died peacefully in her sleep. "The kind of death you wish for," Madeline says to herself, as she walks with the neighbour's family behind the coffin, accompanying her to her final home. She slipped away without any pain or suffering in the early morning, which was when she usually woke up. It was a kind of a false start. Her eyes opened and they closed again just as quickly. And that was it. Madeline would like to go in the same way, bowing out of the world without a whimper. But something tells her that it won't happen like that. She imagines the pain in her left arm, the neck-breaking fall on the hard edges of the stairs, a weight like an elephant's foot pressing down on her chest, and her phone out of reach. She could put up with such an end, as long as it was swift and she didn't linger. She has already prepared for such an eventuality, already filled out the papers that never leave her wallet. "If my mental functions become permanently impaired, with no likelihood of improvement, if the impairment is so severe that I do not understand what is happening to me, and my physical condition means that medical treatment would be needed to keep me alive, I do not wish to be kept alive by such means. I wish medical treatment to be limited to keeping me comfortable and free from pain, and I refuse all other medical treatment." For the funeral, she's not sure yet. The family vault is chock-a-block, so if she wants to join her loved ones, she will have to make herself very small, fit into an urn after being consumed by the flames. She dreads the ordeal, thinks about it sometimes, and then puts it off, saying to herself, "There's time enough yet." Her elderly neighbour had decided on the question of the last resting place without dallying. No frills, a standard ceremony, a funeral mass in St. Joseph's Church, and burial in the old cemetery of St. Pancras. She departed this life in the middle of summer, her wooden coffin shining in the sunlight. She has gone to lie under the cool stone, feet towards the water, facing the mirror-like sea that saw her live out her life and grow old. An accomplished death. The old lady had been ready for several years, waiting to move on with patience, curiosity, and the delectation of the believer who was waiting for paradise. Madeline hopes that the result, whatever it is, lives up to the expectations of her beloved neighbour, who reminded Madeline of her own grandmother. There was something in her accent, in the way she broke up the syllables as if she were biting them, adding unexpected ease and decorating them with the remains of her patois. They reach the family vault, which welcomes them with open arms, its wide stone mouth already gaping. The old lady's spot is on the third row above her parents, atop the coffin of her mother, who agrees to carry her on her womb again, as if the century that had taken her away had been a mere parenthesis, closed by eternity. The old woman lies next to her dead husband in the marble wedding bed, waiting for their children to come and join them one day, to complete the wooden pyramid. The strange tree formed by the stacked boxes with the bodies of those who are no longer alive. When Madeline comes closer to throw down her rose, she notices that the deep cavity is incredibly well organized. She had forgotten how crowded the underground city of graves is, a self-contained world which will hold every one of them in the end.